VentureCast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yep.
Hey, yep. All right. MTP Boston, missing the point. Boston. It's that time of year again, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Tatum was counting from and is mic'd up from years to a month. Or he was like 11 months, this many days, this many hours. Feeding into the sort of narrative that he's built as a superstar this season of, I guess everybody doubts me. It's not enough that I've like gotten to many Eastern Conference finals. It's not enough that I've made the finals. It's not enough that I've lost to, you know, the Golden State fucking Warriors in the finals. I guess to just be even considered any good, I have to win the whole damn thing. Fair or not fair, I think we'll discuss that here. But I want to start with something that Mike and I briefly touched on towards the end of the season. What was it? Was that March when we had this conversation, Mike, when we talked about the idiosyncrasies of the Boston Celtics and the things that they still do to lose games? And I know that you guys have touched on a few of this theme, and it's an ongoing argument between the two of you. But catch me up. Where are we in terms of Mike's doubting of them, because they definitely do have a lot of the same habits, and Ray's sort of promised land approach to the fact that on paper, it can't be denied that they are the best team in the NBA. Where are you guys with it now? Have we switched opinions?
You can go first, Ray.
No, I haven't switched any opinions yet. I think that, you know, once again, they came in and did what they had to do for game one.
Yeah, they beat a Jimmy Butler-less Miami Heat. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much, right. But you got to do that.
Yeah, had they lost, it'd have been, so no.
Yeah, like, had they lost, it would have been really, really embarrassing.
Right, yeah, so you got to, it's like you take care of what you just want to take care of. But back to, you know, what you were saying towards the end of the year, obviously, you know, we all had difference of opinion as far as how the regular season ended. And, you know, I mean, obviously the last two games were great because the bench guys got in there and played really well and played with effort, and we agreed on that. But, you know, you can kind of see they were just ready to get to the playoffs and make that happen. You know, so yeah, I mean, they looked really good on Sunday, you know, except for that about 6 minute stretch in the fourth quarter. But the game was really never in doubt, honestly. But yeah, I love what I've seen so far, and I hope that they're able to still to continue to work on anything that they have to work on. But yeah, but just keep moving the ball, playing good defense, and, you know, not letting Spo and anybody else get in the heads.
Mike, talk to me about that 6 minute stretch in the fourth quarter in the game. Yeah. It down.
Yeah. So it's all hypothetical, right? Because he wasn't there. But if that exact thing happened and Jimmy Butler was there, like, that is a game that the Celtics have lost in the past, and I would have no confidence in them winning this postseason. I can't fault them for things that did not actually happen, though. They closed it out. They got up. It was a 30-point lead at one point in time. But the thing that you and I talked about in that episode back in March, DK, that really fucking still stands out, even though they only missed two free throws, it was Jaylen Brown that missed those two free throws. He went 2-for-4 from the line. And, like, those are the things, again, in a 20-point win, they might be glossed over. But that's one thing that you can actually control. Like you said, that you're just not spending enough time in the gym. You're not actually doing it. And it looks like he's not getting any better with that. I love that they set a record for, you know, three-pointers made. Like, love that. But that
tied
does still...
Tied it or set it?
No, tied it.
Sorry, yeah.
Just game 7 against Milwaukee a couple years ago.
I mean, that actually was shocking to me when I heard that, because I was like, well, I mean, we didn't break the record for threes made. We made a ludicrous amount of fucking threes in that game on Sunday.
I think Cleveland has the record. They hit 25 against Atlanta when they swept them, I think, in 2015.
It's absurd.
It's absurd, yeah. It was the same. Kevin Love went berserk, but yeah. So, mm-hmm.
I mean, but, like, as good as that was, that still scares me in the sense that, you know, they took almost 53 pointers, right? Great. You know, 22 of them went in. But one of the things
it was also a record for range, the average range that we took them at, which I'm unsurprised by, because we were taking circus threes, like, quite frankly, like at times. And I would, like, Kristaps Porzingis hit a couple from like Steph Curry range. And I was like, okay, I guess, I mean, I guess for me, like, I definitely hold both opinions in my head, Mike, because, like, yeah, I think you're correct, because I was discernibly angry during that stretch. Like, that 6 minutes, I was 100% like, here we fucking go. Like, these soft motherfuckers, every single goddamn time they come up against any kind of adversity, I was just like, fuck, absolutely mouthing off. I was starting to worry, right? Which I think is understandable. But at the same time, you look at that range record and it's like, and it does scare you. I know, live by the three, die by the three. I totally understand where you're coming from, but I mean, damn, dude, were we just actually just styling on them? And like, because we're so close to it that we worry when like any sort of run happens. We're just like, we've been burned before. Like recently we've been like burned by very specific things. And like, maybe it's a trauma response. Cause like, I wonder what would happen if I went back and watched that game again. And I think when you watch a game a second time, I do it all the time with the Liverpool games, because it's just like interesting for me to like look at it without being like emotionally involved, like knowing the outcome. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we watch that game again, Ray, would I just see the Celtics like absolutely barely trying and just fucking destroying the Heat? And like, that's because they can do that. Or am I going to see some real frailties in that 6 minutes from a really neutral perspective? I'm trying to understand.
I mean, obviously you never want to be loose with the ball. And I think a lot of turnovers were happening in that 6 minute span. So I think that's where they could clean things up, if I'm being objective and not being biased there. But I mean, listen, it was 91-59 at the end of three. Like, that game was over. Like, it was just a matter of how much were they going to score.
Around nine minutes in the third quarter, I was saying, I wonder when the starters down.
It was crazy. Yeah, well, I mean, I think they were like they were looking to get Tatum triple double. They were seeing if anybody else could get any other numbers.
He was near a triple double in the first half, though. Like, we could have.
Yeah, no, yeah,
the
no.
Third quarter, he was like four assists and like three rebounds away by the first half ended. So,
personally, I thought that was the most under control he's been in a long time.
Punctuated by the end when he like really. I mean, I agree. The point I was going to make is like punctuated by. I really liked his response to that play when they, you know, like it was very not Jason Tatum-y, to be honest with you. Like, I really think in years gone by, he might be looking at the refs like, you know, like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, because I think it was a dirty play personally. What was your opinion on that?
Yeah.
So, because I think that's one of the unwritten rules, right?
But for sure. I mean, I know Mike loved Jalen Brown's response, though.
I liked it too. I missed Marcus Smart in that moment, though. I really think Marcus would have been like fucking right up in that dude's face.
Smart probably would have bust him. It would have been
I didn't miss Smart in that moment because he would have made it all about him. And in this instance, like, you saw Tatum, he just got up and walked to go shoot his free throws. KD and
his teammates
and
handle
Porzingis, like, got in his face, in their face a little bit, like, defended their guy, but then it was over. Like, it did not turn into anything else.
I honestly, when the first, like, millisecond when JT popped up, I thought he was going to go at him. And I was kind of about it, to be honest with you, because he got up really fast. And I was like, Jason Tatum just, like, really, like, just loses his temper. I've never seen it. I've never fucking seen it. He's usually cool as a cucumber to a fault sometimes. Yeah. But I really liked his reaction. He just like, he got up. It made me feel better because I was like, that was a short playoffs. Like for a second there, like that was fucking terrifying. Yeah. It had a little waft of an even more genuine Pierce coming back out in the wheelchair scene from a certain playoff run that we all remember. But to your point, sorry about the under control performance punctuated by that. I agree with you. I really do think he was making a lot of the right decisions with the exception of that one stretch, right?
Right. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, like, that 6 minute run, though, right? If we can just go back to that real quick.
Unsurprised, you want to focus on it?
Well, it's only because you asked the question, like, if we went back and watched
it,
would we not be trying? I think you can, like, it's not an aberration. We've seen this team get up by 34, 35 points before, and in every single one, not every single one, most of those games, they have one of those runs where it doesn't matter who they're playing, doesn't matter if the starters are in. They just stop trying. And the big thing about this team is that, are they able to turn it back on? And in this game, they were. So, like, it didn't kick them in the nuts. I just get worried if they if that is a pattern that they continue to repeat in this postseason.
Ray, would you agree that like the cushion does still need to be pretty big? Because like for better or for worse, they lost the fourth quarter 35-23. Like, you know, in the solo game that was the fourth quarter, like they lost it by double digits. So they had a lot of padding that helps them like not panic, I think, is my theory. Like if they're up by a shitload, like 30 plus.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like
an 18-point lead in that situation, I'm like fucking nervous though.
I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we're speaking all things Celtics, but, you know, we just saw last night as we record this on a Tuesday night, the Lakers had a 20-point lead.
Did you see
in the second half?
Reaction
in the second
after the
half,
game,
dude. AD and Braun were going crazy. D'Angelo Russell stepped up, hit 7 threes, and they lost on a game winner. And I said, wow. And, you know, and once again, had that been us on Sunday, Mike would have been totally right to say, It felt familiar.
Yeah, and it's still true.
Like, you know, and like that, you know, do it, right? Would have been true. But I was so glad, obviously, that we weren't on that. But it's just like, yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, but yeah, they definitely do have to have the big lead, I think. Once again, DeLon Wright, you know, he's been a serviceman in the league since he's been there. He's not going 5 of 5 again in a quarter. That's also what happened. Like, it's always like these crazy performances. It's the D-Wade, it's the Dean Wade, it's just the, you know, there's always someone that you don't
know. That one Tyler Hero.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know, go ballistic. Yeah. I mean, speaking of Tyler Hero, Jrue Holiday had him in jail all day Sunday. Like, jail. Like, you didn't notice. You know, the only thing you notice about Tyler Hero
is not
those wacky ass sunglasses that he had
guy.
On in a press conference.
He's not the same guy anymore.
Not at all. So I loved what Jrue Holiday did with him on Sunday. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, certain guys got hot Sunday that I'm just like, can you sustain that? Because once again, the Celtics have shown they are the best shooting team in the league when they're on. So we have 5 guys that can get 20. Miami, even with Jimmy, doesn't have 5 guys that can get 20. So
I'll say this in response to that, though. Like, I agree with you about you know, the random role players of the Miami Heat going off. We've been honestly on the receiving end of that since like LeBron was there, to be honest.
Right.
Like I watched Mo Williams? Am I conflating years? Like Mo Williams went fucking berserk on us one time. It's like, you know, there's just like, it's just the worst guy you can think of just starts hitting shots against the Celtics. But I will say this, like, you know, Sam Hauser went through a little streak when we were starting to build the lead where he just hit like a kind of absurd amount of threes in a row. And like, I like the fact that we have a little bit of a long and strong volume shooter that they now, this is the thing though. If he's on the floor at the same time as Jimmy Buckets, like Jimmy Butler victimizes the Sam Hausers of the world. Like if he sees Peyton Pritchard on the basketball court, he's like, oh my fuck, I can't believe you left him out here. And he just will kill him.
Yeah.
Like he just will find a way to kill him. He will find a way to kill a Sam Hauser. He, you know, and like you just need your guys to like. Like, I think the point I'm trying to make is that it's nice that we got an opportunity for our role players to not just get their self-esteem just immediately crushed as like the first move that the Miami Heat in aggression towards us. Right? Like, we actually got to see, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen to Al Horford, but like, if you look at Peyton Pritchard's box score, I'm still like, you know, questionable on him as a defensive liability in the playoffs, but he was all over the place. He had 8 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists. That's just like exactly the scoreline I want to see from Peyton Pritchard in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like eight to 12 points, a few rebounds, because that means like they took a fucking junk shot and he's standing by himself underneath the fucking basket. So that's just like positive for the game. And assists, you know, assists, that's a playmaking, something he has to add to his game, because like, you know, the impression that he was leaving on me a lot was just, if he can get a shot hot, he's useful. If he can't, he's not. And like, I think for him to be moving the ball around is indicative of like the whole team. And we don't have Jimmy Butler here just like hurting our feelings, like on the playground right away.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be really good for their confidence. What did you make, Mike, of the role players this past weekend? I'm nervous about the depth of our bench, so I want to hear some positive things maybe.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I was actually really impressed with the
no
way
Cornette
the bench,
also no Cornette.
Yeah, with the way the bench performed. Just thinking about all the times that throughout the course of this year that we talked about how concerned we were about their depth. I mean, Sam Hauser was the perfect person to talk about. He played 14 minutes. He took 6 shots. They were all threes, and he hit 4 of them.
Yep.
So
huge.
But that's more of the live by the three, die by the three, because if none of those go in, then, you know, if that happens, it's a much
closer
game. It's
the most Sam Hauser stat line ever. 12 points, right. 1 rebound, 1 assist. Yep. Like, it's just very, and I'm like, cool, that's fine. Like, come in, like Dion Waiters. Like, it just be Dion Waiters. Like, come in, just come in and hit three threes.
That nice, that's a nice name drop right there.
Just come in and hit three or four threes in a row and then go sit back down. Mm-hmm. That's like, it's 100% right. What I want from you. Like, just come in, heat check, see you later. And that's what I want. And honestly, like, Sam Hauser is the kind of guy that would typically just show up on the Heat bench that you never heard of before, and he would kill you for fucking 14 points. And you're just like, wait, who?
Right.
What the fuck? So I'm actually glad that we have him, to be honest. I know there's questions, obviously, about his, like, defensive abilities, but...
but even this year, like... bench.
Jesus.
They...
We need both, him to be both good. Of them,
yeah, no, both of them... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but...
No, you did.
No, like, both of them... Like, they've made enough of a leap defensively where they've become playable, right? So remember, last year, Joe really didn't trust Pritchard.
That's still in my head. That's still in my head.
Which is why, you know, which is why they weren't out there, you know, at times last year during the postseason. So obviously, Pritchard has started to take a little bit of a leap under Ime, and then, like I said, made that regression last year. But that last month and a half of the season for Payton Pritchard, like, he really took off. Like you said, you mentioned the playmaking. He's been an excellent rebounder from day one. Like, if there's anything he was going to be on the floor, he's going to get you offensive rebound when it's like, wow, like, where did that come from? He rebounds really well for his position. That I'm not worried about.
He follows in shots and he
right, like, exactly,
like,
yeah.
He takes up good positions and fills space on the rebound, which is, like, all you can ask for from your guards.
Exactly. So the shot selection has gotten better. So, yeah, I think, like I said, those guys taking a leap in the game, that's something that me and Micah talked about last week when we did the preview. Like, that is something, it's made that team a lot more formidable because, you know, instead of, you don't now have to go back down to a Brissett or to a Tillman unless you really need to or want to. And once again, those guys will play, but it really depends on the matchup. So
two guys I don't mind, by the way, like, very, like, right. Obviously situationally, like,
yeah.
applied, like, you know, situations right. where if you have some random old head come out from the Bucks that you, like, forgot was on that team and they start, like, fucking up Jason Tatum or, like, you know, chopping up Jaylen Brown, and there's, like, you're not getting calls because the refs are letting him play. I don't know if you saw the end of that fucking 76ers Knicks game. It was, like,
crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Match. Crazy. It was, like, a full-blown wrestling match broke out, and the refs were like, I don't know, man. It's I would feel a little hard done by if I was Philadelphia, but, like, you know, if the second a New York team got good, you knew they were going to start getting bullshit calls their way, let's be honest. So I'm not worried about them. If I'm worried about anybody in the East, by the way, it's probably the Knicks, because it seems like the Bucks are not, like, Giannis is done. Is that, like, see him again?
Yeah, I think he comes back towards the end of the series, but I mean, listen, what I saw Sunday night from Damian Lillard, my God.
Not that worried about it.
I didn't know if he was still capable of those type of performances, and he was like, yeah, yeah. So that scares me because he could get hot at any given time, and we saw that Sunday night.
I'm just worried. I still think we're way better.
You don't play as much defense though, so
yeah. I'm more worried about New York because I think that could become like a Hawks situation for us this in a 7-game series. Like, I'm worried that, like, the Garden, the way the refs are calling the games, like, the way that there's a narrative building around them, like, I don't really want to go through
They're also scrappy as fuck, too.
They are scrappy. Well, they're allowed to be scrappier than the rules allow, but typically. But, I agree. They are scrappy. I don't think Brunson's big enough, and I think our guards would swallow them, and I think in a basketball sense, we would be fine. But...
Yeah, but, you know, I'll stay right there for a second with them, right? So, to me, like, listen, Brunson has been amazing. Obviously, they're down Randall.
But I mean, defensively, our guards, like, that's the place I'm the most secure, you know?
No, sure. But I think with them, right, it's not my original thought, but it's something that I saw on Twitter. So I agree. So I wanted to bring it to the show.
You should have just stolen it.
I don't even know who put it out there. I just know I saw it.
You're already kind of stealing it. So fuck him.
Whatever. So, right. that Knicks team is the 2016-2017 Celtics. Brunson is IT, right? Randall, when he's healthy, was like Al Horford, right, in a sense. And they overachieved because they played harder than you every night. So that's really what it is. Like, they're very good because they coach well, they play hard, but I don't know if they have another gear. Like, so that's where I feel like they grind out games. Like, they grinded out yesterday, like that. I mean, on the other night, that's why they ended up winning that game. So I'm not sure if they have another gear, but like I said, they play extremely hard. That's always going to keep them in a series. But I just don't know offensively, you know, could they keep up with a Boston or a Milwaukee? But I do think if they play Milwaukee that next round, they're going to be Milwaukee.
Doc's the coach, of course. He's not going past the second round.
No, I'm saying, yeah, but they play harder, and it's like that to me, that's enough. So
yeah, I mean, it's I just don't want to see them to be honest with you, because I kind of went from not watching a lot of Knicks games in the regular season to essentially thinking that it would be bad if we lost a game on our run to the finals. Like, I was really thinking to myself, like, with the condition everyone's in, and like we're looking at it before game one, the likelihood we were going to play the 76ers, I was like, we spanked them every time and they like look extra bad.
Right.
So I was like, I'm not worried about that. Like, Embiid's like, doesn't look quite right. That's just, you can just see it.
Yeah.
And I really thought like we should maybe just win every single game, maybe a couple of gentlemen sweeps, you know, maybe we go 3-1 against the Heat, maybe because it's Miami. I don't know. You know, like, we'll see. I would like a 4-0, like across the board. But now I'm like, I feel like I can feel it in my gut. We're going to see the Knicks, and I can feel in my gut that it's going to go to 7 games. And I don't know why, but it's like I saw them and it was like a Jedi recognizing a fucking Sith. And being like, we're not going to fight right now, but I felt the same disturbance in the force. And like, we'll see you down the line. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like, I can just sort of feel it. So, you know, I am a little worried about them. I'll be watching them a lot more closely. I was not familiar with their game, but now I will study my enemy. Okay. Well, I want to talk about the rest of the players' performances on Sunday before we look ahead to game 2 in Boston on Wednesday. Can anyone explain to me? I didn't look deeply into this. Why are we going Sunday, Wednesday?
I think it's because of it's part of his TV, because that's what my supervisors in Mexico.
I guess it benefits us.
Because Boston being the number one seed, they choose what the first round was going to look like as far as when they would play. So
got it.
We knew a week before that it was going to be Sunday. It was just a matter of what time. And then it was going to be either Sunday, Tuesday, or Sunday, Wednesday. But because Boston being the number one seed, they were able to say, okay, we'll stretch out the series. So it'd be 2 days of rest between the first, 3 games, which is huge.
I like us better rested. I don't think we're the kind of team that does better.
Because that's especially having been KP and Al, obviously. So I think that's
totally
that's huge for them. And
especially in between a home game, right? Like, just to that's true R&R. You know, you do a little scrimmage in the afternoon a couple times, and you do some tape meetings, but like, you're really like soft towing it into the playoffs, which is sort of like what this team needs. All right. So I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it from for the starting five. We discussed the bench. I'm going to take it from least amount of points to most. That's not to say that they contributed the least amount, but Drew Holiday, you already mentioned, pocketed Tyler Hero. I think he plays a really great sacrifice game when he's on the floor at the same time as Derek White. I think he really plays off Derek White super well, especially defensively. If you just watch Drew Holiday, and I'm sure you guys have done this, like, I'm sure all Celtics fans have done this at periods, he's a super interesting player to watch. Like, the way he moves, the way he reads the game, how switched on he is defensively. He's like Marcus, to me, defensively, he's Marcus at his best, because what he doesn't have in, like, the same level of hustle, he makes up for in, like, size, athleticism, and, like, strength. And it's, like, just as effective. I'm not saying he doesn't hustle, but, like, obviously that was Marcus's, like, standout quality. And the way he moves offensively, you know, I just really like how he opens up space for other players. It's another sacrifice fly sort of situation, you know, like, he moves in and out of the paint at a pace and with a purpose that you can tell the guy guarding him is just miserable. You know, like, he's just like, this fucking sucks. He can't really hold on to him because he's like super strong and athletic. He can shoot from pretty much anywhere, and he uses more of the dummy and the threat to open up these guys around him. And it's like, it's such a fun time just ISO camming your vision onto Drew Holiday. Mike, say some nice things as well about Drew Holiday, please. Or, I would love to hear your thoughts now that you've seen him in a playoff game comparably to our last kind of guard rotation that we saw in a playoff situation.
That's exactly where I was going to go, is that the biggest thing about his performance, not only that he was a lockdown defensively all night, but he took 8 shots. That's it. And we've seen here in Boston with previous point guards where if they were 2 for 6, they were going to try and shoot the way out of that slump. And what Holiday did was he made sure everyone else got the ball, right? Like, he created space in the floor. He was locked down defensively. And he didn't make it about him, which I think was the most defining thing that I took away from that game, because he had such a big impact. But if you just looked at the stat sheet, you would think that he had a terrible game. When in reality, he was one of the leaders out there. Like, he facilitated most of the plays and made Derek White look so much better in that game. But I also love Derek White too.
Yeah, we'll come on to him and we'll say nice things about him. Ray, is there a Drew Holiday like bananas game coming in the playoffs? Is there a fucking
I really hope so.
I feel like there's gonna be one where he goes berserk.
Yeah, to answer your question, no, they don't need one. But as someone who likes to see him be aggressive on the floor, like I'm waiting for that moment to happen. Once again, I think they'll need it as the rounds increase. But yeah, I think it's coming. It's not just for game one, but he's sacrificed all year. I'm sure they had conversations about what he can do offensively. Once again, he just averaged 19-8 last year in Milwaukee, right? So it's not like he just, you know, fell off the face of the earth, but he led the league in corner threes. And yeah, I just think that he said, okay, I'm playing with Tatum, Brown, and Porzingis. Like, I don't need to be that guy. And he's had some games this year where he's hit, you know, timely threes. And I mean, even on Sunday, right? Like, he hit a couple of threes early on when they went on like that 14-2 run. Like, it was like, okay, like,
he got a shot on that note,
and he backed off. Yep.
Do we think that, like, the way that the Celtics play has sort of, I know, I understand the sacrifice part of it, and I do think he's doing that. But has it, we ask him to shoot from a range that I don't think he's as effective at. Like, I really do think his mid-range game is, like, if he gets it going, like, borderline as good as Jaylen Brown's. And neither of them shoot from the mid-range, like, at all, really. And, like, I know that I'm, like, a little slut for mid-range shots, and I know that I like, shut up about the mid-range in forever. And if anyone's wondering why that is, it's because of the era that I started watching basketball.
Right.
The people who were wet were mid-range, like, you know, pull-up jump shooters that would, like, shoot really well and pull up and hit just, like, six shots, or, like, the KG turnaround jump shot, or the Kobe turnaround jump shot, like, it's sort of a dying breed in this league, and I still like the players that do it, and we have two of the best guys in the league at it, and I just really sometimes wish, maybe I fetishize it a little bit, but I really just sometimes wish both of them would their mid-range game a little more. Am I crazy? Is it just like, fuck it, do the advanced analytics, like shoot the threes when you shoot?
Well, I think that's what Joe was preaching. I think he, and once again, they're not wrong, because he's led the league in corner threes. So, I mean, that to me is fine, but the shot that you're talking about, that usually is on the left side of the floor.
Left side
that
elbow,
little,
yeah.
That little turnaround for about 15 feet, is this fucking automatic.
Sick. It's sick. And also, I want to see, if we're doing advanced analytics, like, can I see a specific player's overall efficiency from different, like impact on the game level efficiency of their different ranges? Because, yeah, I agree. I mean, he hits big threes. He can still take those. But he could have a higher volume overall if he just added that shot back in at a 1.5 rate. You know, like, it doesn't even have to be twice as much or three times as much. Like, to me, it's just like, there's times in a game that call for that kind of play. Like, the thing that frustrates us all, I think, is that it's like they take shots where when you're in the game and you're on the beating heart of the game and you can feel it, you automatically click in your head, like, we need our highest percentage 2-point shot right now that we can get. Yeah. And they never make that decision. And I think that's what kind of has Mike on the edge of his seat a lot of the time. It has me on the edge of my seat too. And it's a little frustrating when you have the Drew Holidays of the world, that I watched him cook us with that shot when he was on the books. And I literally couldn't even get mad because it was so sexy. So I was like, all right, like, Drew Holiday's going to fucking get you like that, I guess. It was part of why I was so excited to get him. And now we're not even having him do his, like, special move. It's like when you have Goku, bro, just make his hair turn yellow, you know, and have him fucking go Super Saiyan on you. Like, use the best qualities of your players. Or maybe I'm wrong, but I know I sound like an old fart, but what do you guys think?
No, I mean, yeah, it definitely needs to be more of a balance. And I've been saying that to people that I talk to, especially at CDD guard. I'm like, yo, like, if you're able to score from all three levels, it makes you that much harder to guard. That simple. And, you know, we've seen
all of our guys can do that on paper.
No, right. No, correct. That's what I'm saying. But Joe, it's like, keep doing that. Like, do what got you to the dance. Like, don't deviate from that. And once again, it's sometimes the defense dictates what you're going to shoot, obviously. So, which is why I think we saw 53s on Sunday. One is because Joe wants that to happen. But two, if they're playing zone, they're, you know, guess what? For those that don't, they're playing zone because they know they can't stay in front of Tatum or Brown. So you have to play zone or you're going to get cooked. Like, it's that simple. So you have to hope that they miss so that you're in the game. And that's what happened in the fourth quarter a little bit. They started missing shots. That's why they got back. But if they're making shots, you know, it's over, baby. Like, it's a wrap.
I know. I mean, it is old farty. I get it. It's just that, like, it's like, but like Kristaps has a Dirk Nowitzki level elbow shot, you know, and like it goes in every time because it looks like he's shooting. It's look like, yeah, I agree. I know after the fucking circus performance he put from outside of range, I'm talking about his mid range game, but I'm the guy doing that. But I'm just saying, like, I'm saying that he has like, it must be like shooting beer pong for him when he's closer to the rim. Like, he can see into the fucking rim. So it's like, dude, it just looks effortless when he's in there. I don't know, Mike, am I crazy?
No, I think you're 100% fucking right. I think one of the things that makes this team the most frustrating is you know that they could be dominant on all levels of offense. Whether it's three mid-range or red and
you know,
or
they
red
could
the paint.
Because we've watched them do it a ton
we've,
of times.
We've seen them do it. And it's like in those runs, again, sorry to harp on this, they choose to forget the other two layers of their game and they just jack up threes. Like, that's all that they do. Like, one of the things that I wanted to see more about, from KP was his offensive rebounding, right? Like, that's one of the things.
We're terrible at that. We're terrible at rebounding in general still.
Right. Well, we had a pretty good game. I think we out-rebounded them by 20.
We did. I'm just thinking, I know there's going to be a game we fucking get mad at them again for not, like, rebounding.
Right. It's just, like, in those situations where you see that what you're currently doing is not working and what you want to do is just jack up threes and not working, are you able to put KP in the paint and just have him box everybody out and grab those rebounds to get more second-chance opportunities? Because if you do that, like that, we haven't been able to do that the last couple of years. I love Al. I think this is the perfect role for Al right now, playing 25, 26 minutes off the bench. But if you have a 7'2" monster that can just literally without jumping, just crash the boards, like that's how you're going to make sure that what happened in the last three postseasons doesn't happen again.
But even to add to that, right, that's totally valid. I just feel like, and this is just me, because once again, it's old school in me too. Just about every game until they stop it, I would feed Porzingis the first five times.
I know.
Just throw it in there.
You remember Shaq? Every game, it was just like, oh, this is how this is.
I'm just going to throw it down there. Because once again, Jaime Jaquez, who in any other year would be rookie of the year, but you know, this is a 7'4" giant, a San Antonio name. Like, remember, Yabba was a fucking monster.
That guy's gonna be the fucking MVP in two.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Crazy.
He's a fucking
freak. Hawkins Jr. is nice.
He is. He had a good game.
And they had him on KP. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, you couldn't even see him at time.
Comical.
But
they didn't take advantage of it, like, any of those times. They, like, did not, like, they actually...
No, they did at times. They did.
There was a couple of times burned in my memory where I was, like, squealing mismatch at the fucking television.
Yeah.
And nobody was, like, listening to me. I thought I was trying to make them hear me in Boston. Yeah. I was like, fucking mismatch! And, like, they just didn't. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I mean, like I said, there was a few times in the first half where they went to it. They're going to have Bam on him unless they're, I mean, especially if they're running.
He's tough to play against. I'm not.
Oh, for sure. No, Bam was great. Bam was great on Sunday, but
he's always killing Jason Tatum, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're best of friends, and so that's why he's on his head. But yeah,
I love that he's best friends.
Yeah, yeah. He's done pretty well against him most of his career, but, you know, once again, it'll be a different outcome this time around. But yeah, no, I just think that, take care of the, you know, of the big man down low. Give it to him. Give it to him down there. The first five, six possessions. And whether he's going to get fouled, whether he's going to turn around and get the first 8 points. Like, because we saw it during the regular season. When either him and Jaylen Brown get out to a hot start, they usually blow teams out the building.
Oh, yeah.
It's not an opinion. That's a fact. Oh, yeah. So just, you know, if it ain't broke, you don't need to fix it. So,
I agree.
You know, go from there. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Derek White. On that note,
pivot right over
to the Jrue Holiday conversation.
My guy.
But, yeah, I mean, I just think I think his floor is just at its probably the highest it's ever been. Like an average Derek White performance is now at such a consistent level that I'm ready to say without fear of like retribution from the basketball gods that like he basically is the second or third most important player on the floor for us almost every game. I think that can fluctuate. I think that him, JB, and Kristaps like take 2, 3, and 4 every game. And they sort of rotate between the three of them, which is a nice problem to have, to be honest. I mean, it's just a cool fact of life. But when Derek White takes over a game, it's to me, correct me if I'm wrong or if you guys feel differently. When he has stretches that we're doing really well, that's when I feel at my most stable with our performance, like my most assured that we're playing well collectively as a team and like everybody's like reading off the same script, you know. Like D. White's cooking and he's doing all the things that he does now. I mean, he's super efficient from three. I don't know how good of a game he had from three actually on Sunday. I remember a couple misses, but
4 of 8.
Yeah, I mean, great. I mean, really good. Like that's absolutely outrageous. If you keep a 50% fucking three-point clip going for that, like unbelievable. I think he plays his natural advantages now in a way, like with extreme confidence, so that we're an incredibly difficult team to match up against from one through five because of the guys that we have. I would ask the question, since, you know, just to tie it back to the last two conversations, and whoever wants to jump in on this can, who guards Brunson if we play the Knicks? Because my first instinct is to say that it's Drew. But I don't know. I mean, like, we could try both. But I think, like, D. White is, like, blocking Brunson a couple of times, like, on the trailing move, right? Like, maybe letting him go a little bit because you kind of have to. And then be right behind him and just fucking yam that block because he has this huge size mismatch. But I also think that Drew Holiday could potentially pocket Jalen Brunson, and it would be a really cool one-on-one matchup to watch, like from both ends, if he wanted to just say, like, I got that guy. So yeah, I'm curious what you guys would like to see.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think just based off of the way that Derek White plays, like he plays so much bigger than he actually is. He has blocks not only against guards, but against power forwards and fives sometimes during the game, right? And that's not something that you see out of a guard. So I would say like, you should let him go first. And I think you can make Brunson's life a living hell, not looking ahead. You know, I'm not overlooking the Heat, but I think that this should be a pretty easy Miami Heat series. But how much hell could you create for Brunson if you have White guarding him half the time and then Drew Holiday guarding him the other half? Like, there's going to be no reprieve because what Derek White doesn't do well, Drew Holiday does, and vice versa. But I would ride White until he fails you, because realistically, in the last 2 years, he hasn't failed you.
I agree. I would fucking ride him like I stole him. No, I don't actually. I have a different take, but I'm gonna let Ray go first before I respond. Go ahead, Ray. I mean, it's especially since he shaved his head. He's looking real dapper these days.
Appreciate it. No, I missed this. So we talked about it in Discord. I'm a mission, brother. This is it. This only happens when you're on here. So I would actually have Jaylen Brown guard him.
Whoa. Okay.
I'd have Jaylen Brown is taking that challenge all year, especially second half of the year. I would put Jaylen Brown on Brunson, if that's the case, and just say, good luck.
Goodbye, Derek Brunson. I think it'd be
luck. And I'm like, once again, Brown.
Showing him a lot of respect. I mean, he's a good player, but I mean, that would solve the problem.
Yep. I put JB on him immediately. Obviously, you know, you don't put him on him the whole game, but I would do Brown, White, then Holiday. I put Holiday like on Hardor. Like I said, what's crazy, Holiday can guard Hartenstein down low. Like it won't be a problem. Like that's insane to say, but it's true. So I would start with JB and then let him set the tone and then, you know, go from there. You know, just to keep building that fresh. Yeah, I love
about,
that.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about because, you know, but the way Brunson plays, like if we had JB at the two more consistently and just you know, moving like that way offensively as well, just going two-way with him to start the game, I think you might have me convinced. Because what I was going to say was, I think we need to, our offense benefits so much from Derek White playing well offensively. Like, I think that, like I said before, like, I really feel like we're clicking when he's playing well offensively. And I don't want him, like, caught up in a battle with the best player on the other team, like, immediately. You know what I mean? I want him to get into his a little bit. But I also think he could be great help against Brunson when he does inevitably beat guys one-on-one. I think because his slashing obviously is not, anything to be sniffed at, and his shooting. And I think that you're right about Derek White being as long as he is. I was thinking Drew Holiday to start to just put him in a battle with Brunson and see what he's made of. But I think you're right about setting the tone with JB, because he's not going to cook JB. Like, they might have a good battle back and forth, but he's not going to kill him. He's just definitely not. 100% not. So I agree with you. And I also think that gets the very front-running styles of Jaylen Brown kind of activated immediately, because he is a tone setter. That is actually his role on the team, is to set the tone both offensively and defensively. And we've seen that from him consistently over the past few years, early in games and early in series. So I fucking agree. I actually hadn't thought about that. That's a good call.
Yeah. That's all we're here. But I want to add, it's funny, I'm going to pull a mic and go back to the run. Okay, this ties back to Derek White. those 6 minutes that happened, guess who was on the bench?
Derek White.
So he immediately comes back in. He hits two threes. Game over.
Safety blanket.
Exactly. He's becoming our Derek Fisher. And if that's the case, there's going to be a lot of winning here going forward. So that's where he's becoming a guy that he hits the big shots when we need him. And once again, clutch is not always, you're down 3 or 4 and then the guy hits the shot. It's when the team is making a run, like Miami was making a run, and immediately you hit 2 or 3s, but jumped the lead just back up to 20, 21. Now it's like, okay, well, damn, we had some momentum, but now that's gone. So,
and that quality, that specific thing you're talking about, we've been missing that for years.
Right, exactly. Yep. So to have that with him, once again, Holiday has done that at some points throughout the year as well. So I think, Derek White for sure has been the most consistent player on the team. And once again, I'd argue anyone down that says otherwise, because you're once again, yes, we know Tatum is the best player. We got Brown. We know that. But the most consistent player, the most important player for this team's success is definitely with Derek White. And like I said, I'd love to see, I love the nickname that his father gave him and Holiday, the stock exchange. I think that's a phenomenal nickname for that backcourt. So I think that's great. So yeah, so I think that's great. But yeah, no, Derek White has been an integral part of what they're done really since he's been here. Once again, I watched him a lot, so that's why I knew I was at some point he's going to be a guy that this city's going to love. And it took a while for some of us to warm up, and that's fine. But I knew, nope. I said, when he gets acclimated, they're going to love him. And now, like I said, he's been phenomenal here. So I'm looking forward to more of Derek White, killing teams going forward.
Looking forward to more 10 assist Jason Tatum games.
Yes. Absolutely.
I think.
Yep. Yeah, that's what Mike's been talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I know you guys touched on this. I don't want to belabor this point because I know that this got a lot of, airtime over the last few episodes. But I do want to just say for myself, it looks like an era change when he's playmaking at that level. Like, it looks like somebody that he looks like a guy that can basically not be stopped. Because quite frankly, I mean, I'm not being hyperbolic here, but I've only ever seen a handful of guys that can do this. I really have. Like, there's guys that can change games in different ways. There's guys that can turn on their scoring at a given time and it can change a game. There's guys that can turn on their playmaking, defense. I mean, I don't know of that many guys. I think the list is pretty short that can do all of those things at any given time. And or pick one, depending on what the game's giving him, and use that to win the game. I do agree that he's more effective at it earlier in the game, which is obviously frustrating for a lot of us because we associate the clutch levels of basketball greatness with the fourth quarter. And I do want his fourth quarter performances to improve. But and I think that they will, because I think it's the last thing that needs to happen. Because, and I think we've been pretty steadily checking off boxes as we sort of rise up to the top of this. Because this kind of thing, that like a 10 assist game from him, is a game that's going to give him a level of confidence that. And I saw the look on his face. It was a level of confidence like, I know something that apparently you guys don't, right? And I promise you, only ever seen it a few times. Like, there was a look on his face at one point when we were going on that big third quarter run. that I saw, sorry to bring this up, I saw it happen to Peyton Manning when he was down against the Pats in that AFC Championship game in 2006. I saw Kobe Bryant do it against us in game six of the 2010 finals. Because game seven, I mean, like, that wasn't anyone but us not having anyone that could rebound the fucking basketball. But
right, pretty
but I right. saw, if we just had one guy that could get, like, four rebounds, we would have won that game. But and Rajon Rondo didn't take, like, a garbage shot, fucking three-point shot at the very end, whatever. I'm sorry. It still hurts. I've seen, and my point is, I've seen a handful of guys with this level of confidence. LeBron James had it for about 7 years. Where it was like, oh shit, like he can just, actually it's probably longer. It was probably a good 15 years of LeBron just being able to just win a game at will at any level, right? I mean, say what you will, LeBron could do it all. He was the best passer in the NBA for many years. He was the best defensive player in the NBA for many years. He was the best scorer in the NBA for a few years. I mean, Kobe was a great scorer and he was a pretty good one-on-one defender, but you know, it's not quite the same as that, like multi-level, how to have a high basketball IQ type of performance. And I've started to see it in Tatum. I'm not convinced he's going to be able to pull it out when the stakes are high though. Yeah. But that's right. Just because I haven't seen that. But I mean, I know it's in there. Like there's a monster inside him. Like the talent is outrageous already. It's just this thing where he's adding to his game at like different levels. And it's like, oh, it's getting scary.
I mean, Ray's going to bring up game six in Philly last year. About like we've seen it once from Tatum. Right?
Totally. I mean, I'm not saying we haven't seen it. I'm just saying I want to see it at a consistent level because I've also seen him disappear.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, actually, I was actually pretty pissed game six Philly last year because
I know.
He had to show it up. He had to show it up. And then all of a sudden he went bananas and saved his ass and the rest of ours at the time. But no, but I mean, I always point to like my favorite game of him is that game six in Milwaukee a few years ago. That was my first year working at the Garden, and you know, people were like, "Oh my God!" Everybody was like, "Yo, see you Sunday," and he went ballistic in Milwaukee. And I was like, "Oh, like it's there." Once again, it's just a matter of are we going to see it on a regular basis? But that's why I said at the beginning, this is the most under control he's been. And once again, it wasn't the best scoring output he's had, but he controlled the game on every facet. That's what Mike is clamoring about, you clamoring about, DK, Bobby at times. So, you know, that's where if he's doing that, where granted we don't need a triple double every game, you know, that'd be beautiful. If I could get 28-9-7, I'd be fine with that going forward, you know, because I know that means that he's super engaged. And I would love for him to master that skip pass like Vince Carter used to do back in the day, because he's 6'9". You're not going to steal it from him at that height. If you just skip it over, you know, over the head of defenders, he'd probably get, you know, at least 8 assists a game just doing that. So
in order to master that, though, I think the issue is the way that we play. And I agree with you. I love the skip pass. I love it as a concept in general. And the 08 Celtics did it a couple times. And this is to my point.
Well, maybe we have Rondo.
Yeah. Well, the thing Rondo. Is like, well, KG could do it too. KG used to do it, skip it from the high elbow, like, you know, when they thought maybe he was going to take a turnaround jump shot, and then he would face up and then he would just skip it over. And the thing that we were able to do so effectively with the skip pass was find Ray Allen in the corner arriving. And like, I think that is a very underrated skill, the off the ball run. And like, we saw basically, in my opinion, the best guy to ever do it, which was Ray. Like, as much as he was absolutely outrageous as the shooter, of course, his movement off the ball is like why that highlight of him on Miami exists. Like the way he moves off the ball is, and like the way, even and though
he didn't even look down.
No, he didn't even look down. And it's like, you know, and it's heartbreaking that it's him. Obviously, it broke my heart at the time, but it's the way he would move baseline to baseline, even when we got him, and he was distinctly out of his prime when we got him, like athletically. But the way he even moved baseline to baseline, and like our system, we don't actually do that. We find spots, and then when the ball rotates, we rotate with the ball, which isn't, I just don't think it's as deliberate, you know? And it's like, at that point, if you're trying to do a skip pass, I think you're going to have a couple, you're going to have some growing pains because you need guys to get to that spot at the right exact right time.
Right.
And I do agree that Tatum could totally master it, but like, I would need Jaylen Brown probably to like master, or Derek White, I think, could probably do it, where it's like, you got to be able to be elusive enough off the ball where you've completely lost your man. And then there's got to be two guys before him setting very purposeful screens in order to help whoever the off the ball runner is to get there. And like, that's the kind of thing we used to do in 08. It was fucking beautiful to watch. but and a great coach. That's why. I mean, it's like, it's mm-hmm. Genuinely, it was like, that's how we did. That's how we used to accomplish that. Yeah. And we don't really play like that, you know?
Yeah. There's for my girls, there was a game winner that Ray Allen hit that year. They won the championship. I think it was against, not Charlotte. Everyone remembers that. Toronto, where they had a side out.
Second round.
Ray Allen literally ran from the other side of the court. So where Pierce was going to be, Pierce literally just dumps it off to him. She would say game, but like game winner, I'm just like, can we please incorporate that to the offense?
Yeah.
Please. Please. Like, literally, the defender was lost. The man, and I don't know how you left Ray at that time, even then, as he was, you left Ray Allen that wide open. I don't know how that happened, but I was like, that's when Doc could actually call plays. Now, I don't know what happened, but he could actually do plays. Then. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, that was beautiful. So I would love for that.
Calling plays. Like, I mean, seriously, talking about calling plays, like, we have four or five plays off the Paul Pierce ISO that would win us games at will. Like, we would get into close situations, and the team would just instinctively know to go into the Paul Pierce ISO, and they would run one of, like, two to three plays. Rondo would always be redundant in those situations, but like Ray would get open. Famously, Ray Allen said, every game winner I ever hit, every buzzer beater I ever hit on the Celtics was a pass from Paul Pierce. And that's true. Like, that's like actually fucking true. Like, he really did find him like all the time in those situations because we were going off the ISO, right? So it's like, why don't we ever run the fucking ISO at Jason Tatum? He would be the most elite isolation player of all time. It's like he could shoot at will because he wouldn't make good decisions. I get it. But like, yeah. Maybe now he would. Maybe now he would.
Well, that's. I think that's where. So you just. I think that's.
Tell me you don't want to see that.
That's the next. No, that's the next part for sure. Because once again, there isn't anyone that can stop him 1-on-1. It's not. And I think
you clear out that. That's why, you clear that's why out, dude. Shots,
yeah, that's why we see the jump shots that we shouldn't see at times. But it's like, man, if that continues to get unlocked, where he is an ISO. And then someone, he draws a double for somebody and finds someone in the corner. Like, it's, I mean, they're already showing
us. We're already all about spacing, right? We're already all about fucking spacing. Like, we're already in our fucking spots. If you can get one switch, you don't even need an ideal matchup switch. If you can just switch their best defender off him for 1 second, like high enough, like close enough to that, to the half court line, where he immediately just calls the play and everyone just runs in the opposite direction. If they try to send a double to him, yes, you're right. He can find any fucking pass because there will be a guy open. Whoever has their defender leave them and for the double team, it'll be such a wide space. Their instruction will just be go to the basket and he'll find them. You know, like you said, he'll find them overhead because he's fucking enormous. If not, okay, let's pistols at dawn. Like, let's see if you can take Jason Tatum all the way to the fucking rack because I bet you can't. Like, whoever you are, right? If it's Kawhi Leonard, maybe. But do it to him three or four times. Tatum will get his. Tatum will 100% get his. Let him do that. Let him be that player in the right situations. Call it at the right times so that he doesn't make the decision himself with 12 seconds left on the fucking shot clock in a situation where we need a high percentage fucking two from around the rim.
We need game 7 Tatum all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what it is. We need game 7 Tatum all the time. Because there's not a game 7 he's played that he has not showed up. They haven't won every game Warriors. 7, but he has not showed up. Every game 7 they've needed, he's always showed up.
Oh, that's right, we lost in 6.
No, I'm saying, but every game 7 that there's been, like, he has always showed
up. What about the Heat?
Yeah, he last year didn't show up, but you're going to see his ankles hurt.
But getting injured, that affects that matters.
Well, did he get?
If he was healthy and then messed up, you got me. But I'm like,
I mean, he got hurt, not injured, but like, that's just
play. Yeah, that's fair. He fucked his ankle up. Come on. I mean,
And I get it. I mean, because I mean, granted, you know,
Michael Jordan didn't have the flu. Okay. It's fine.
Yeah, but
he was up all night doing blow. Let's be honest.
Speaking of that, because I'm like, there's been a lot of, you know, obviously there's always going to be trolling on social media because that's just what people love to do. But, you know, they're like, oh, you know, people are, you know, beating their chest about, you know, beating it, you know, a Butler-less, you know, Miami. And I want to paint this picture because obviously the three of us here are Celtics fans. So when Hayward was out, Kyrie was out, Kemba had a shattered knee, there was not a single person on NBA Twitter that felt bad for Boston. So if you think that I'm gonna feel sorry about Jimmy Butler being hurt, once again, injuries definitely suck. But if you think I'm gonna feel sorry about facing this team without Jimmy Butler, I got two words for you. Fuck you. there's no, he thought I was gonna say the other one, so I'm DX, but they could do that too. But it's like, hey, I'm not gonna feel bad about playing a guy. I'm sorry. Look, injuries suck. And I wish him a speedy recovery. But once again, no one felt bad when Hayward and Kyrie and, like I said, Kemba got hurt and Jalen Brown got hurt a few years ago before Brooklyn series. Like, I'm good. I'm sorry. You played with the front of you. Oh, well.
Yeah, I don't feel
get the
bad
job done.
Jimmy Butler. I'm delighted that they don't
need Jimmy Butler. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm fucking so happy that he's not out there. You know how much fucking that guy's pussy?
Yeah, what a joke.
Yeah, I'm happy he's not there. I don't give a fuck. I'll take the easiest ride possible. Thank
right,
you.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I have no interest in overcoming adversity if we don't have to. I'm good with it. Totally good with it. Also, if anyone's listening in the universe, I feel that way about life as well. So if you'd like to just have good things continue to happen to me, that would be great. I'm in no way interested in learning any lessons. Okay, let's look ahead. Well, let's look ahead to the future. Mike, your crystal ball is in front of you. Do you rub a crystal ball? How do you make a crystal ball where it's not like a genie lamp, right? You probably remove some sort of protective covering so that Sauron can't see.
Yeah.
And then you look into it in order to see the future. And you're looking ahead just 24 hours because, I mean, honestly, no one's ever called you a visionary. You just want to see the Celtics game. You know, you could save humanity, but here you are with your crystal ball. You're looking ahead and you're looking at this game. And what are your emotions while you're watching this game? You're looking at you watching the game. Are you watching another blowout? Are you looking at random guys you've never heard of from the Heat come in and scored 35 points? What's going through your mind tomorrow about this time?
I think I'm looking at myself being pleasantly surprised that even though they didn't get out to a huge lead and it was a close game at halftime, that the Celtics didn't give up. And then they poured it on in the fourth quarter. Because that's one of the things that we haven't seen from this team is one of their big setbacks is that if they don't blow you out in the first half, then you really have a good chance to beat them. The Celtics this year were 10-9 in games that were 5 points or less with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
That's not good.
And that's not good in the season where you only lost 16 games, 14 games, whatever it was. So, like, that's
we
not
better just blow everybody out for the remainder of the playoffs. I think that would be the move. Boring fourth quarters for the foreseeable, I think, is what we're going to have to get to.
I think Spo's going to do everything he can tomorrow to not allow a 14-2 run to start the game, right? But if that happens, and if we're in a situation where it's like 53-51 at halftime, I'm looking now and seeing that I'm super excited that this team decided they were going to show up in the fourth quarter that they always do in the first quarter, and they still pull out a 25-point victory.
Interesting. Yeah. Ray, do you see the same thing in the future for the Celtics?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely going to be closer, I think, in the first half than it was on Sunday. Once again, Spo's going to throw the kitchen sink, and he has to, right?
But who's going to get us? Like, who on their roster on paper is really going to come get us? Like, I don't...
No, only like I said, I really like Jaime Hawkins. I like his game a lot. I think that he's a gamer.
I think he had the best possible game he could have against us on Sunday.
Offensively, you can say that, sure. I thought he played pretty good defense. But once again, you know, when you're playing Tatum, like, you're going to get cooked eventually. So that's just what it was. But
that's going to start to add up, don't you think? Like, that's going to start to add up game to game if they keep him doing that.
Yeah.
Right?
They'll play better at home because most role players do. But I still think that it will be a similar result to what we saw Sunday. Like, it may not be a 20-point thing, but I still think the Celtics win by 15 because, once again, they can't go to another gear, even sometimes with Jimmy. So let me be clear about that. I was like, oh, it's not Jimmy. Listen, there's even times when Jimmy has gone 5-18 from a game. We've seen it. So let's not make it seem like he's always 12-16 or 12-20.
I think the Heat year on year have gotten worse since we lost to them.
Absolutely.
The bubble.
The bubble. Managing to lose to them in the series. But yeah.
But also got to the finals by winning, and that helps too. So
We knew they were going to get fucked up in the finals. Like, we knew for sure. And it was like so frustrating, you know?
Yep.
They shouldn't have even been there. It should have been our first trip to the finals against the Nuggets. and the Nuggets would have fucking beaten us. I want that on fucking record because we're talking about the year we lost to the fucking Heat anyway. The Nuggets would have fucking beaten us, and then this would have been the real chip on your shoulder year. Like, it would have been like, all right, well, we're going to see them again. Like, it wasn't like when the Warriors, like, kind of punched us in the mouth for the last time, and we're never going to see them in the finals again. Like, that iteration of the Warriors team is never going to be back in the finals, so there's no chance of that happening.
Right.
So they shouldn't have even really been there that year. We were the better team. We should have won the fucking games. But you're never going to be able to get revenge on them. Like, they just left you with that. That's the kind of team that they are. But, like, the Nuggets, if we start a rivalry with them, we could conceivably see them, like, three more times. You know what I mean? And we're going to look back on the year that the Heat beat us as like, we should have made it that year, man. You know, like, that could have been a rubber. Like, then this could have happened. I mean, whatever. But this is high in the sky hypothetical. If I'll say this, one, you mentioned your favorite Jason Tatum game, and I was thinking about it since you said that. I think my favorite is game one against Brooklyn, where he locks KD down and then does the spinny move at the end to, like, finish
the game.
Of
the
That was probably my favorite Jason.
That was fun,
Mike, do you have a favorite off the top of your head?
Honestly, not recency bias. I mean, I think it was this past game. Like, I've been asking for it for 4 years. Like, when is he going to have that Larry Bird playoff game where he only takes a select amount of shots, but he controls the entire fucking game? And we finally got it.
Yep. Yeah.
Against the Jimmy Butler.
That's what we need. No, but I mean, but that's one thing that's what we need. And, you know, I hope that he has more performances like that. Like I said, it was the most controlled he's ever looked. And, you know, once again, I know people, it's sexier to get to 40 points. I get that. But like I said, if you can get close to a triple-double, I was like, it's 28-9-7, or you get another triple-double this series, so be it. He, like I said, he is by far the best player in the series when he's on. So just go out there and prove it. This is be you.
Yeah, I agree. I think everybody else is consistently levels have really raised. And I think we've seen that over the regular season. I'm glad that it's producing the playoffs, regardless of the opponents put in front of us. I think if I'm going to make a prediction for the next game, I think we're going to see another 30-plus point blowout at the start of the game, to be honest, because I just don't see who they have 1 through 8 that can possibly compete with who we have, like, even 1 through 5. So I just think we're going to get the job done. It might be a little bit, like, more boring to talk about because I think we're just going to absolutely wax these guys, but what will be interesting is previewing our trip to Miami for game 3, because obviously that's going to change everything and be the first real test, probably, unless we give ourselves a pop quiz in the next home game. Because the only team that can beat us on Wednesday is us. So it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. Well, for myself, DK Sizzle, for Rayshon Buchanan, for Mike Marcangelo, I have presented to you a wonderful piece of content about the Boston Celtics, and I wish they would present us back a wonderful piece of basketball on Wednesday. This has been Missing the Point. Good night.
Hey, it's Tim from 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys, the comedy podcast you had no idea you needed. Join Ben, Jeff, and me as we continue our musical road trip back through the years and around the globe. See, just when you thought all white guys were like Joe Rogan, you come across three educators trying to remember when we were cool.
50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Electric Acid.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast? Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast, transform your influence.
Electricast. Electricast.